Welcome to the sermon podcast of Paley Presbyterian Church. The following sermon is by Pastor Jonathan Meixel.
During these challenging days, it's easy for us to wonder whether or not God is with us. Where's God when a virus spreads around the world? Where is God when we're quarantined and not able to spend time together? Where is God when people lay sick and dying? Where is God when a police officer ends the life of a man in his custody? Where is God when the things in our world in which we place so much of our trust suddenly feel unstable and not able to be grounded in reality? Where is God? Last week, we began a new series of sermons in which we were reminded from the book of Job that God is present. Even in the midst of difficulty, even in the midst of turmoil, we can trust that God is there. God is at work in our lives. God is at work in our world, keeping things together and providing guidance. The Bible is clear. We can never move beyond the presence of God. But God's presence doesn't require the absence of pain and difficulty. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart, because God has overcome this world. Now, affirming God's presence then points us to a second and perhaps more relevant question. Who is this God who's present with us? What does God look like? How does God interact with us? What does it mean for God to be present with us? And it's to those questions that we're going to turn our attention over the next several weeks as we learn more about who God is by focusing on the names of God that we find in Scripture. In the Old Testament, names were more than just tags to differentiate one person from another. Names carried meaning. They spoke of character and identity as of the one so named. And so by examining these names of God, we get a greater and greater understanding into God's character, how God wishes to relate to each and every one of us. Today, in our first look at a name of God, we're going to look at the name Yahweh Yireh, or as some translations, you may have heard it in a familiar song, Jehovah Jireh. God will provide. And while that sounds innocent and innocuous on the surface, and in many ways it is, as God provides for us, God's provision we're going to see in this particular passage where this name was first derived really meant the difference between life and death. Abraham was tested by God. And in the process, he was called to do something that seems inconceivable to all of us. He was called to sacrifice his son. And in the process of that testing, we see a reminder and we see these words from Abraham that God is indeed the one who provides. Abraham's faith, though tested, was confirmed and strong. As we read this passage from Genesis chapter 22, we are reminded that the God of Abraham is the God who provides for us in the midst of trying and difficult times. I'm going to read today from the book of Genesis, chapter 22, beginning with verse 1, where we read this. After these things, God tested Abraham. And he said to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering and set out and went to the place in the distance that God had shown him. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place far away. Then Abraham said to his young men, Stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac said to his father, "Father," and he said to him, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God himself will provide the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So the two of them walked on together. And when they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham looked up and saw a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided." It's a very dramatic, dramatic story. Dramatic way in which God provided. You know, when you hear the words, "The Lord will provide," or maybe even when I said it earlier in this sermon, what comes to your mind? How often do you think about God providing for you? My mind usually jumps to God providing sort of those basic necessities of life. That's sort of the first thing that comes to my mind. Things like food and clothing and shelter. Truth be told, God does provide these material things. We say grace and we give thanks before we eat meals as one small way of recognizing that God is the one who provides these things. We often have to be reminded of that God is the provider because, you know, it's easy for us to think that we're the ones responsible, that it's our bodies and the world in which we live and all of these things that we've made possible. We're reminded by God that God is the one who gave us these bodies. God is the one who gave us this world. God is the one who gave us the ingenuity and ability to figure out how to plant crops and all of these kinds of things. It was God who ultimately provides all that we have. And so it's important for us to say thank you to God, to recognize God's provision in these most basic kinds of ways. The Hebrew word here, the verb ra'ah, from which we get this gyra understanding, means to see. And in this case, it's translated as provide. God sees the future as well as the past and the present. And because of that, he's able to anticipate and to provide for what is needed. Interestingly enough, in English, the word provision is made up of two Latin words that mean to see beforehand. When you pray to Jehovah Jireh, you're praying to the God who sees the situation beforehand and is able to provide for your needs and mine. God makes provision for the basic needs of our life. He is Jehovah Jireh. As we read in this passage about Abraham, it wasn't the basic necessities of life by which God was called Jehovah Jireh. In Abraham's experience, God's provision was way more direct. It was literally the difference between life and death for his beloved son Isaac. At the outset of our passage today, we read a somewhat ominous statement. After these things, God tested Abraham. This was not the start of the relationship between God and Abraham. Years earlier, when Abraham was still known by his birth name Abram, God called him to leave his homeland, to travel to a place that he was not told the name of, and that God would show him as he traveled. Abraham trusted God. In the midst, God promised to Abraham to make his name great. Later, this blessing was clarified to include a great expanse of land and a long line of descendants. God chose Abraham, and God developed a relationship with Abraham that would indeed have eternal significance. Throughout this time with God, Abraham was forced to trust in God in many different ways. No more was this more apparent than when it came to this promise of many descendants. Abraham had become an old man, his wife Sarah an old woman. They were past the age when either of them could expect to become parents. And yet God had made a promise that through Abraham there would be a long line of descendants. And to bring this point home more clearly, God actually appeared to Abraham at the Oaks of Mamre. There the promise was affirmed that very soon Sarah would conceive and give birth to a son. This idea, because they were so old, was so ridiculous that Scripture says Sarah actually laughed out loud. But in a short time, what she deemed ridiculous actually occurred. In their old age, and they were old, Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born, Abraham and Sarah became parents. The child of the promise was born. And with that as the setting, this test put forth by God to Abraham seems all the more absurd. Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on the one of the mountains that I will show you. In case there's any question of what God is calling Abraham to do here, that means God was instructing Abraham to go and kill his only son. Now, such an instruction sounds wrong to us on so many levels. First and foremost, murder and child sacrifice were and are wrong. Many of the surrounding communities in Abraham's day actually practiced child sacrifice as a means of, they thought, appeasing the gods. But while this is early in God's direct involvement with Abraham, and it was before the giving of the law with Moses hundreds of years later, we understand from those directives that God's very character is one that affirms the value of life. We know that murder is wrong. And at this later time, even though God called the Israelites to set apart their oldest child, that was to be accomplished in a symbolic manner, using an animal as the chosen sacrifice. Sacrificing children was clearly outside the lines of godly activity. In addition, this child that was to be sacrificed was the beloved son of Abraham, the one being tested. Anyone who has been a parent, or even who can imagine being a parent, can quickly see how incomprehensible such a call would be. On top of all of that, God had just made a promise to Abraham that he would have many descendants. He was an old man. The probability of having even one child was remote. Surely this promise to Abraham was not possible if the late-in-life child Isaac was taken from him. This was a test of monumental and unbelievable proportions. How could God possibly be leading Abraham in this direction? As we consider that, as we think about it, we wonder whether God has ever called us in ways that seemed utterly unbelievable. No, I'm confident you weren't called to a child sacrifice. And ultimately, Abraham wasn't called to do that either. But the directives and the call of God can seem extreme in their challenge very often in our lives. We're currently aware of the challenges of this pandemic, the challenges that keep us in our homes and keep us from doing a lot of the things that we enjoy. How will God lead us through these times? Many of you have faced and experienced the challenges of the death of a close family member, a trying medical diagnosis, loss of a job, or other kinds of difficulty that seemed beyond your capacity to navigate through. Will God provide in these kinds of times? Even in more simple acts, like knocking on the door of a neighbor to strike up a friendship or reaching out on the phone to a friend you know is hurting, they can seem overwhelming at times. They can seem beyond our ability to do what it is that God is leading us to do. Will God provide when God leads us in things that seem way beyond our capacity and our ability? Abraham certainly didn't want to face the situation that was before him. We can rest assured that taking his son as God instructed was not what he wanted. It would have been natural and right to question the directions of God. But we read in this passage that Abraham obeyed God and set out on a journey. And it was no small journey. It would have been bad enough if Abraham had to build up the courage to do some sort of quick action. But it says here that they had to travel for 3 days before arriving at the mountain directed by God. That had to be an excruciating time. But again, we see Abraham trusting and following God, putting one step in front of the other, making his way to follow in the path God laid before him. At the base of the mountain, Abraham said to the servants who had traveled with him, "Stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Did you notice that last part of what Abraham said? "We will come back to you." Abraham didn't know what was going to occur. He didn't know how it was going to occur. He didn't know how God was going to act. But he still had confidence. Somehow, some way, both he and Isaac would return. But he still didn't know how that would happen. And so Abraham and Isaac carry the wood, the fire, the knife, to the place of the sacrifice. And upon arriving there, things must have begun to register to the young teen Isaac. "Father, the fire and the wood are here, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? We all have what we need except the sacrifice. Where are we going to get the sacrifice?" And it's then that Abraham makes this first pronouncement of God's provision. "God himself will provide the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." This is the first of two times where Abraham will highlight the provision of God. Between those two times is the actual provision of God. Here he's proclaiming the provision of God even before God has provided. And you know, how much of our lives are in this earlier state of Abraham? We've read in scripture about the ways in which God provides. We've heard the stories of other people who've experienced the ways that God has provided, but sometimes our own experience is lacking. And so we're going through this period where we're confident, sort of, but it's really more of a hope that God will actually provide. We can't say with the same sort of certainty because it's still looking to the future. Finally, the moment arrived. Abraham had built the altar and had placed the wood. Where was God? How could God intervene even at this last moment? He then bound his son. We can quickly read over those words, but it's important to remember that Abraham was well over 100 years old and Isaac was a young teenager. Without some cooperation from Isaac, this would not have been possible. Isaac, following the example of his father Abraham in his relationship with God, showed an incredible amount of trust in his father. But we still wonder about these unbelievable circumstances. How could Abraham continue forward in such an unbelievable call? It was getting close. But Abraham had a faith in God, developed over years of seeing God provide. So even when God called him to do something out of character and unbelievable, Abraham trusted God. Later in the letter to the Hebrews, the writer kind of gets us into the mind of Abraham here a little bit. He says, "By faith, Abraham, when put to the test, offered up Isaac. He who had received the promise was ready to offer up his only son, of whom he had been told, 'It is through Isaac that descendants shall be named for you.' He considered the fact that God is able even to raise someone from the dead." Figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Presumably, that's what was going through Abraham's mind. Even though it seemed incomprehensible what God had called him to do, he had a faith and a trust in God. So there, with Isaac bound and on the altar, one final action in this drama remained. But where was God? What was God going to do? And it was at that last, very last moment that an angel cried out, stopping Abraham, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." It was at the absolute last second, but God had indeed provided. Jehovah Jireh, God provided. Abraham passed the test. As Abraham looked up, He saw a ram caught in a thicket. That ram would become the sacrifice for his son. The Lord will provide. On the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. Now no longer was it looking ahead. Now it was recognizing that God had provided, and Abraham could, with relief, affirm the truth of God's provision. The boy's life was spared. God had provided. Now this is certainly an astounding passage, one with rich sets of meanings. What do we learn from Abraham here? What do we learn from this encounter with God? Well, I want to suggest there's at least two key lessons as we wrap things up today. One of those lessons that Abraham learned is the affirmation that God is called to be at first place in our lives. Abraham was tested to see where his ultimate trust was placed in a very dramatic way. Almost certainly, God isn't going to test us in precisely that same manner. But we are still challenged to ask if there's anything in our lives that we would place above our relationship with God. Do we hold even those things most precious to us higher, at a higher place than our relationship and trust in God? If so, Scripture reminds us that they may be idols. They may be things that God is inviting us to recognize as not as important, not as primary in our lives to our relationship with God. Abraham saw God's amazing and miraculous provision precisely because he was willing to put his complete trust in God. If he hadn't climbed the mountain, he wouldn't have seen the ram. Presumably the ram was present all along, but it was only when Abraham followed God that God opened up his eyes to that provision. How often in our lives are we unwilling to follow after God, playing it safe and staying within the confines of what we can see and understand and what seems reasonable to us? And in the process, we miss the opportunity to see God do the miracle that only God can do. It was in putting his complete trust in God. It was in complete obedience and completely following after the ways of God that Abraham saw God work in an incredible way. It seems to be the case that when we hold back some area of our life, we're putting our trust and our contentment in that thing instead of in God. We're denying God's ability to truly provide for our needs. When God calls, God provides. It doesn't always make sense the ways that he provides. We don't always see how it's going to play out. But it's in putting our complete trust in God that we see him at work. Second big lesson that we learn from Abraham is that God does indeed provide. It's precisely in getting to that moment of hopeless despair that we can truly appreciate God as the source of our provision. I mentioned earlier that we often think that God's providing is in those basic things like food and shelter and clothing. You know, sometimes it's harder for us living in a place of abundance like the United States to really trust that God is the one who is providing. In our abundance, we can easily think we are responsible. But it's in precisely getting to those points of no return that we recognize God's true provision in our lives. And amazingly, having had that experience from God, we are changed as we begin to look into the future. No longer is it a wondering hope. Instead, it's an assurance set in reality that recognizes because God has been faithful in the past, I can trust he will be faithful in the future. Some of you have had that experience of seeing God's faithfulness in the past. Tom Gallagher, a member of our congregation, has seen God be faithful in some trying times in the life of him and his family. And Tom's going to share about that time at this point in our service.
Hi, my name is Tom Gallagher. I'm currently self-employed. I've been blessed to have my own business for approximately 9 years. My family and I have been attending Paley Presbyterian Church for approximately 2 to 3 years and just joined as members in November 2019. My wife and I became familiar with Paley Presbyterian Church through attending the Paley Blues Festival several years ago. We met former pastor Jeff Conway and his wife at the festival. They were so warm and friendly when we met them that my wife and I decided to visit Paley Presbyterian with our son Noah soon after fact to see them and meet other members of the church. Everyone turned out to be as friendly and personal as we could have imagined, and we continue to enjoy getting more connected with the church family. I know God as Yahweh Yireh, the Lord will provide. One night at the end of June 2017, my dad suddenly passed away at home after suffering a massive stroke at the age of 67. My father, Tom Jr., had been a well-loved member of the community, a faithful churchgoer, and a longtime owner of a plumbing company. He had done a lot to help many people throughout Delaware and Chester counties over time with his acts of kindness and generosity. So the community outpouring after his death was immediate. But in addition to the emotional shock and upheaval that ensued for my mother and my family, we were left with the urgent need to rapidly clear out and liquidate a massive warehouse of plumbing equipment, vehicles, and supplies that had sat idle for about 30 years. We needed to rapidly provide my mother with money to live on. So for the next 5 months, in addition to my needing to run my own small backflow prevention testing business, I was spending my nights and weekends in a dusty hot warehouse in Delaware County trying to help my family clear out the warehouse. The items ranged from small plumbing fittings to large contractor equipment, and the tasks ranged from counting and sorting to scrapping countless loads of metal. Again, friends and family members who loved my father rallied around my family and pitched in to help us get the job done. One local businessman brought his three grown sons over several days to help clear off hard-to-reach shelves 30 feet high. Truthfully, even with the incredible acts of kindness shown to my family, I was not thinking clearly at this time. In fact, I got into the only fender bender I can remember because I was so distracted by my own shock and stress and the constant activity happening at the time. I was going on autopilot, grieving and trying to postpone my own jobs, hoping my customers would understand, not knowing how or when I could get it all done. Some days I just wanted to drive my car to a solitary area and mourn the loss of my father, who had become my best friend later in life. Through my 20s and early 30s, I worked for my father's business. In the early days, our relationship had the ups and downs that come with a father and son working together in such close proximity. Later in my life, I came to look forward to my father's almost daily check-in calls and to rely on him for advice on everything from business to parenting. My dad always knew how to make me laugh and make light of stressful situations. I remember we even started telling one another that we loved each other, which we never used to do. Once my dad was gone, my head was spinning with the suddenness of his passing and the marching on of normal life. The daily responsibilities that came with having a family, which that included my wife and then three-year-old son, a house, a business, etc. In all honesty, I wasn't sure how or if I could juggle everything. So I prayed a lot, asking God to take control. Sometimes he was quiet, but in the end, he always managed to reveal his goodness and the positive and unexpected things that happened during this journey when I least expected it. Not only did I somehow manage to help my mother and sisters get the warehouse to auction by November of that difficult year, I was able to keep up with jobs. In fact, at the end of the year, I looked back to find that my business had some of the highest earnings it had ever had. The best part was that God helped me remain hopeful and optimistic about my life and future when I initially struggled with the feelings of grief, anger, and despair after my dad's passing. God had turned one of the most challenging years into a personal story of perseverance and of triumph over a major loss in my life, and he provided for me and my family at every step along the way. My name is Tom Gallagher, and through this experience, I have come to know God better. I have come to trust him more. And I've learned to let him take control when I'm fearful and I don't have the answers. I know he will come through and provide for me.
Thank you, Tom, for sharing those wonderful ways in which God provided in your life. God does indeed provide for our needs. As we hear the experience of Abraham, there are significant parts of this story that jar us. It doesn't seem possible that God could really call us to do something that doesn't make sense, that doesn't fit our concept of propriety. God knows far better than we what is best. Are we willing to trust God, even in those trying and difficult times, even when it doesn't make sense, even when we don't know how God is going to lead? If we do, we may be surprised at the ways in which God does indeed provide. And with that experience of God's provision, We can move into the future as people confident of God's provision, that confident that God is at work, confident that we can trust in God, Jehovah Jireh. God will provide.